Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by the holiday season. The holiday season. We know nobody likes you, and we're here to emphasize it.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here.
This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Josh Kagan. And hoo boy, do we have a rip-roaring holiday mom-tacular for you.
It's the brunch special. The brunch-tacular Christmas special.
We have mimosas, and we have our moms.
Our literal actual moms.
Our literal actual moms. Seated next to me is my mom, Corky, known to Connecticut and anyone who gets Tribune papers or who got Tribune papers across the country as the savvy shopper. And she's great. And I told her about a day ago that she was going to do this. And her response to that was, I'm going to be jet lagged. And we have mimosas, so I'm going to be drinking, and I don't really have any kind of wealth of knowledge about the topic. And I said, great, that's pretty much par for the course for not only our podcast, but podcasts. Hello, Mom.
Hello, Josh.
And in this corner.
Two moms enter, one mom leaves.
One piece of content leaves.
My mom is where I get, I think, most of my performing chops, I think it is fair to say. I learned how to sing through mimicking her. She has been a performer. She has been a music teacher. And I am, please welcome to the podcasting stage, Kathy.
Yay!
You're welcome, Molly. Very much.
I now feel like I have to double back because I didn't credit my mom for anything that I have. But I'm not as tall as I should be because of my mom. My dad was very tall. And my mom comes from a race of Italian and French-Canadian hobbit people.
Yes, well.
And also, I feel like most of my sense of humor and my general cynicism about most that we were watching, we were reviewing the material this morning, and the exact part, the emotional conclusion, where Linus wraps his blanket around Charlie Brown's dumb little Christmas tree, and it becomes a beautiful tree, my mom looked up from her phone and went, oh, please.
That's about where I get a tear in my eye.
Yes, yes. So I'm going to – I'll just open this up to Team Mom. You two were you were like actually around when this debuted, when Charlie Brown Christmas debuted. And I'm curious – if either of you, you were probably, Mom, you were squarely in your A Mighty Wind years, going into your hippie years. So I assume you weren't watching a lot of children's programming, but I'll ask both of you, do you have any memories of this from like when it actually came out?
I think it came out in 64. I was in high school and I have no memory of seeing it on my own at that time. The first memory I have of it is when you were about three. And since I had no problem parking you in front of the television.
At all. Third parent. Well, second parent, actually. Bless you, Dad.
I think that would be the first time that I saw it.
What are your memories of that?
You know, at the time I thought it was charming and adorable. And Peanuts was very popular at the time, and Snoopy was very popular. And I actually think I parked you in front of the television in a tiny little red Snoopy bathrobe and slippers shaped like kind of dead Snoopies, but you thought they were adorable.
Wait, did they have like little X's over their eyes?
Well, no, but it was Snoopy lying on his back with his head facing up, and then you slid your feet into them. And
little sternum toes.
I guess that's better than sliding your feet into like the back of his head.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Sort of, if you have to have dead Snoopy slippers.
Or anywhere else one could insert. Never mind. It's all bad. Do you remember what I thought of it?
You loved it. You absolutely loved it. You thought it was wonderful, and you loved – I think that's when you first fell in love with Snoopy. You loved Snoopy.
To the point where, if I remember correctly, was there a period in my life where I just preferred to be referred to as Charlie Brown?
Yes, but you had several of those periods. I mean, there were several times, you know, I got a Mother's Day card the first year you could write, and it said, Happy Mother's Day, love, Willy Wonka.
This is true.
Wow.
Looking for your kid identity.
I contained multitudes.
You were LARPing.
Yes. Kathy, do you remember the special from the first time around? And if not, do you remember the first time you and Molly watched it?
You know, I know that it was sort of appointment TV for us when I was growing up. I have two younger sisters, and we definitely would know the date it was going to play, and we'd get there in front of it. We didn't have DVR. And so if you missed it on that first run, you missed it. Yeah. And the kids the next day at school would be doing the little dance, the auditorium dance with all the kids. And I would not have had my refresher. I don't know if I'm the kid that bobs from side to side or, you know, I really needed the refresher. And so we did grow up watching it year after year, but I don't think we had the opportunity to memorize everything like my kids did. Cause pretty much as soon as I had a kid, we were on probably VHS at that point.
Yeah.
Watching the recording of it. Cause we would just pirate it, VHS record it when it played, mm-hmm. and then watch it all year long. We watched it a lot. At one point, we had a van that had a VHS player in it, and that was on the happy tape. Mm-hmm. If we had to take a long drive, we just popped in the happy tape from 6 hours of VHS playing everything they loved.
And you were very proficient at pausing the VCR to get the commercials
out. Oh, we didn't watch the commercials.
Yeah.
No.
So common. Oh, yes. No.
What else was on, quote unquote, the happy tape?
We watched a lot of Disney stuff, Mary Poppins clips.
Of course.
We had a couple of videos that were sing-along. And so the Disney mm-hmm. songs would play as they had been played in the movie, but you'd have sing-along words in the bottom. And so we knew all the words. And so, yeah, and good stuff from TV, like the Charlie Brown.
Like a Charlie Brown Christmas.
Absolutely.
And what were your, besides wanting to memorize the dances so you can do them at school the next day, which is probably the cutest thing I'm ever going to hear.
It's a noble pursuit.
How did it land on you?
Well, we thought it was hysterical, and Snoopy was everyone wanted to have. I had all the Snoopy stuff. I had a Snoopy lunchbox and little figurines, and the birthday cakes and cards would be often Snoopy things or Mary Poppins because that's my jam. And I think we thought it was just hysterical. We didn't really get that kind of emotional zing from it, like I got when I watched it with my kids when we were young. It was just fun. It was fun that the tree ended up beautiful. It was yay.
Yeah.
But when you're an adult watching it with your children, the tree being beautiful and Hark the Herald Angels being sung, I just got you right there. You know, so it turned into a different thing from the experience as a child to the experience as a parent, for sure.
I bet, unless you're Quirky, who's just like, F this.
Well, I think I was a little milder about it when you were little.
Yes, of course.
And I'm sure that, you know, we certainly applauded the message of trying to overcome the commercialism of the holiday and look for the true meaning, because even then, a million years ago, Christmas was very commercial. And so trying to get your kids who were making out their lists to Santa, much like Lucy or the other characters.
Sally. Tens and twenties
send cash. but we were trying to emphasize that there's a deeper meaning to the holidays. I tried my best.
but then launched on a life of basically reporting on retail deals.
Correct.
And shopping, like literally right there in your name, the savvy shopper.
Correct. So,
correct. Well, you know, and the word commercialism hit me very strangely. I watched it last week and I thought, we have accepted now that Christmas is commercial. Whereas when that came out, this was
a big
an affront. We're turning Christmas into a commercial enterprise. And when they said commercialism maybe 3 or 4 times in the show, I thought, wow. That was really something we balked at back then, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, you have a model of the Charlie Brown tree, the pre-transformation tree.
Absolutely. That stands in my living room all year long. So
awesome.
I bought into the commercialism. I bought the Charlie Brown tree with a little blue blanket.
But then you let your kids decorate it. Like my youngest brother will bring home like Legend of Zelda, the, you know, ornaments from Hot Topic, and we'll put them on the Charlie Brown tree.
It's our Charlie Brown tree.
Yeah, it's our commercialism.
And it's always ironic to me. I think Mother and I were discussing this earlier today. The idea that the first special railed against commercialism and then Snoopy
spawned.
And Charlie Brown were put on literally every surface that had like mass and depth, from dead Snoopy slippers to coffee cups to posters to whatever. And I'm Sure, we had all that garbage in our house.
Yes, I just had my coffee cup this morning was my little red. Yeah. It looks like the shirt you're wearing right now, Josh. It has all the characters on the.
I am wearing my very fetching bright red Charlie Brown Christmas shirt.
It is
shirt.
Fetching. Mm-hmm.
I've got my Joe Cool shirt, so we're all commercialed out.
Yes.
We're living the message.
Well, and Vince Guaraldi is all over my happy Spotify playlist, so.
Yeah,
he lives with me today.
Yeah. Because my first day of preschool, I wore a little skirt with all the peanuts on it.
You totally did. Yeah. I forgot about that skirt. She was the cutest girl to ever start preschool, I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting that in a show that emphasizes rejecting commercialism and trying to find the meaning of Christmas, that the idea of a Charlie Brown Christmas tree is known by everyone. If you say Charlie Brown Christmas tree, everybody knows what you're talking about, whether they're mm-hmm. Peanuts fans or not. And now you can buy Charlie Brown Christmas trees.
Yeah. Linus lost. He lost that battle. Sorry, Linus.
Oh, no. The show, and Molly and I have talked about this a lot in the past when we revisit the show, and even the first time we watched it, is that, like, Mom, you were just saying, you know, you and I watched it, and I thought it was charming, and I loved it. And Kathy, you were saying you thought it was hysterical. And then you get older, and this is something we've gone back to many times, Molly, the idea that the first line of this beloved classic holiday special is, I think something's wrong with me.
I don't feel happy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what this show's going to be about?
Was that... Especially when you two were showing it to us and your kids, did that ever land on either of you as odd? Or did you find yourself thinking like, oh yeah, no, this is exactly what, because it's there's a lot of sadness to it. And I'm curious if either of you were ever like, maybe our children shouldn't be watching this. It's odd. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I think though that Charlie Brown became established so quickly as the sad, unhappy. Charlie Brown became established as that character. Mm-hmm. So I think I didn't feel the need to compensate for that with you and your sister. I think that it was just a matter of, well, we know some people who are kind of Debbie Downers, not that we had that term then, but we have people who are kind of sad sacks, we would have called them then. And we have people who are terminally happy, and everybody else kind of falls somewhere between. So this was, I think, more for you just following the exploits of a character who, for whatever reason, is kind of dragging around and is, you might have found him a bit of a wet blanket, actually, as opposed to, oh, we feel sorry for him. Hmm. He clearly has issues.
Well, we definitely talked about, like, as kids, we related to Charlie Brown. We went, yeah, I'm also sad around Christmas. Yeah, my friends are also kind of mean to me. Yeah, my, you know, and then as adults watching through these specials, especially, and going, oh, well, Charlie Brown kind of brought this on himself sometimes. Charlie Brown could have had a better attitude about this. He could have maybe not, you know, picked this fight he didn't need to pick. And did you find, like, watching it with your kids, did you see kind of both of those, or did you find that influence like, oh, well, what are my kids seeing versus what am I seeing?
Well, I know that when I was a kid, the thing that bothered me about the special was not that he admitted that he was sad, but that he was always being sort of thwarted and disrespected, but that he would continue, you know, the moment that you realize you're being set up to be frustrated with Charlie Brown is after his little psychiatric session, Lucy offers him the directorship. And the face that he gives full front to the camera, if there were a camera, is the most joyful, happy face. It's his eyes are lit up and he's got that little squiggly smile that really makes a U on his face. And he's so happy. There's such hope for himself in his future. And you know the frustration he's going to go through. Mm-hmm. And yet at the end, he does prevail, you know? So I think the thing that I didn't want you to feel discouraged about was how thwarted he always was, how disrespected he was all along. Even his dog was mocking him.
Especially his dog.
Right, you know? But still, he persevered. He took Linus and went out and didn't get the aluminum tree, got the real tree. I love the face. There's a little face where Is it when all the little sprinkle sound, the little needles fall off the tree?
Yes, the little tiddling.
And Linus looks at him, and they're expressionless. There's no mouth, which means there's no expression. And then his eyebrows sort of lower down, and you see this little half smile is drawn in. It's so fleeting. If you're not watching for it, you don't see it. But
we watched it a bunch.
Yes. And so after many watchings, I did catch that little smile. That's when he kind of took his power back. You know, forget what Lucy thinks. I'm buying this little trick. It needs me. So something. The neediest person in that show found something that needed him, you know, and then that's where it turns around for him. So I didn't want you all to feel sad and frustrated for him. I wanted you to get to the end where all of his efforts are justified and rewarded. Not the way he thought they would be, but you know, it's like his community. I love the footage of them all sort of dragging out behind him as he's marching out with that tree. He's going to make it a beautiful Christmas. I don't care what they say. And that energy, that energy of hope that he has in that moment draws all the nasty Neds out the door behind him to see what Christmas really is.
Yeah. And it's a kid's special where the protagonist goes out and just looks at the stars and thinks about what he's learned. And it's just such a high watermark, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you ever worry, Mom, that Charlie Brown was, did you have similar concerns that Kathy did, that Charlie Brown was such a sad sack and sort of a negative person and his friends always gave him a ration of crap?
So disrespected.
Did you ever worry that that was having a weird effect on me? Because I dealt with bullying and things like that growing up, and wasn't always the most popular kid. And I'm curious if there was ever a time that you were like, maybe you need to watch something else where people are a little kinder to each other.
Well, I have to say that even at that age, your television choices were eclectic. So you were watching a great deal of television.
It's true.
Where there were characters of all sorts dealing with all sorts of various issues, most of which ended with something blowing up. And so... No, I was not worried that this would be harmful to your childhood.
Were there other sorts of Christmas specials did you take in as a kid? Were there other sort of seasonal offerings?
Well, there were. You mean when Josh was a kid?
Yes.
Yeah, there was the Grinch, and there was
all the Rankin Bass specials.
What's the one with the monster that has a toothache?
Oh yeah,
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yes, sure.
Or as I will always call it from now on, the monster who had a toothache. Right. You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, but do you recall the monster who had a toothache? Oh, the monster who had a toothache.
Had a very achy tooth. There's a little seed for your seasonal review, Molly. Oh, my God. That's awesome. You got to work in the island of misfit toys and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were all of the garbage, all of the sort of the night before Christmas with the little mice who fixed the big clock.
Right. Frosty.
Frosty.
Absolutely Frosty. So there was a whole calendar starting right on Thanksgiving and going straight through until Christmas.
Well, you know, Molly, I know you're not going to believe this, Josh, but she had a tendency to be kind of a bossy boots. And
spit take.
And it was not alarming, but I noted it, that she got real good real quick. She was 4. And she could do all the Lucy rants. You know, I've been kissed by a dog. I've been dog.
You also dressed me as Lucy for Halloween
David
was born. Yeah.
Well, David was a little bald baby and very sweet and docile. And we just put him in the stroller with a Charlie Brown shirt on.
And a football that he could chew on. Yep.
And then Molly walked alongside. We painted some white tennies with the little saddle shoe marker and got her a little blue dress.
And I inhabited the role.
She
first
did.
Cosplay.
Yeah, truly. You got to dress as the character that best reflects your personality.
She was adorable.
I felt like I was supposed to identify with Lucy because she looked most like me. I was like, I am also bossy and have dark hair. And I like the color blue. I guess that's me in this universe.
Yep.
Never mind my naturally curly hair.
Oh, so then David was Linus.
Was he? Yeah.
Right. Truly. The inside of him is more Linus.
I feel like James, my youngest brother, is Schroeder. Don't you think?
Kind of engaged in what his... art is and not really paying attention to the rest of us. Okay. Yeah.
Where would you put Tabitha? That's my sister. In the Peanuts Parthenon pantheon. I would say Lucy, but maybe Sally. Maybe she's like a Sally with a Lucy rising.
Yeah, I think that would be closer to it.
Yeah, Sally's got her bossiness too.
Yeah. That's true.
And she's not quite as bossy as Lucy, or perhaps not with quite the edge.
This is true.
She's more subtly bossy.
Subliminally bossy.
Well, Sally fervently, directedly pursued love. She decided who she loved and she went for it. Was that Tabitha?
No.
No.
Okay. I mean, she loved horses.
No, she loved horses. She loved her stuffed animals. She loved her Snoopy slushy maker.
Tell me more.
Who wouldn't?
The Snoopy snow cone
the
machine.
The Snoopy snow cone machine.
Oh, my God.
Yes,
my gosh.
We had the, it was shaped like the doghouse.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel so deprived.
They still make them.
Amazing.
And it is the most inefficient way. So you just sit there and you turn that crank you put in ice cubes, you turn that crank. Yeah. No, it's not Bluetooth enabled yet. That would be great.
You plug it into the wall.
It's app controlled.
Flip a switch.
Yeah. Well, then you just go get one of those Hawaiian ice machines. I think this was the...
That was our grandpa's strategy.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Yeah.
No, this was the analog version where it took 45 minutes to
Which was the whole point, if you're a parent, to come up with... An activity that writes.
That never occurred to me.
A lot of time.
Oh, he's having a moment. It's okay, Josh.
That's right. Hilarious. This will be fun. Mommy's going to go drink. Save some of that for my margarita.
Turn the crank, Joshy.
Just keep turning. You and Tabby take turns. Turning.
Data entry job. Yes.
Oh, my God.
I want to go back for a second because we were talking about the tree. This is just for my own edification, and I'm sure Molly's too. That scene in A Charlie Brown Christmas where Linus and Charlie Brown go tree shopping. Please tell me that there were Christmas tree lots in the 1960s that looked like that. Lie if you have to.
Of course there were, Josh.
Oh, good. What actually happened?
There were no tree lots that looked like that. They just had regular Christmas trees, and some of them were scraggly. But if you went to a department store, you could
Sears
find
or Montgomery Ward.
Yes, you could find aluminum trees, silver. You could find pink, fuzzy Christmas trees. You couldn't find any purple and pink. Square trees as
they were in that
lot.
Like that. We did have a silver, I don't even know what to call it.
They were like bottle brushes, weren't they?
There you go. Like a silver, shiny, bottle brushy type tree.
Oh.
That my dad got a wheel that you stick in front of a floodlight and the wheel would turn and it would be
colors
green
in it.
And then it would be pink and you could see the color sweep past the tree. And
my grandpa was pretty cool, you guys.
Oh my God. He's got fiber optic everything. And he thought that was fantastic. And my mother hated it. And it lasted maybe 2 years. And then she said, I miss the Christmas tree smell. Is what she told him. And so he got her a real tree again. And then from there on, we had real trees until she decided she hated vacuuming pine needles more.
In August.
Right. Because they're still there everywhere. Because it was shaggy carpet back then. And so we got a real good fake. And Molly still to this day has to come to Grandma's house and help us put that thing together. Because it's not really beautifully high tech like they are. It doesn't just
open
like an
umbrella. It's several different umbrella pieces
to get it all to work.
The aluminum trees were sharp though, weren't they?
Yes, they were. You could literally cut yourself on those things. But
I thought those were wonderful. We never had an aluminum tree. I thought they were quite beautiful, and I did love the projector things with the cells in it of different colors, and that threw different lights on the trees. But we always had a real tree.
Yep, I do. Admit that the day the tree comes in and it gives off that cool piney smell, it's just absolutely wonderful.
I have seen tree lots that sell Charlie Brown trees. They just cut off a branch and staple it to some wood.
Oh, really?
Apartment dwellers. Yeah,
they absolutely do. my sister, Josh's aunt, who is the Martha Stewart of the family, does...
You okay there, Josh?
You do okay, Mom.
Thank you, Josh. Does a Charlie Brown tree most years, along with her absolutely magnificent artificial tree, perfectly decorated. But they're trendy now. And also, there's a trend taken from the Charlie Brown tree when he puts the one ornament on and it bends over and touches the ground. Now it is a trend to do that on the top of your own tree, to put a heavy ornament on a long tree with a long top and have it bend over. And then that's the Charlie Brown tree.
And that kind of makes me think Grinch, too.
Seuss has a real tendency to
Seuss physics.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
It's like giving a tree a trendy asymmetrical haircut.
You know, those are the coolest people in town.
The emo trees. Kathy and Molly, what was Christmas like in your house? What were some of the traditions?
Most of our real traditions come at the big family gathering, which is always at my mom and dad's house, and that's where all of our family gifts are exchanged. Our personal, all my kids were young, Santa was a big thing. We did the big gift reveal where Santa doesn't wrap his presents. Santa just brings them and puts them by your tree. So the bike is just there ready to ride, sort of thing.
Ooh.
And so we went all out. The one year we got the kids an inflatable castle that was meant to just stand in the living room, but it was inflatable and firm enough to the point that they could climb up on it and slide down. And we brought it home and did not bother to take it out of the box until Christmas Eve when they were all sleeping. And there was no pump, and it was an inflatable. And I literally laid on the floor of the living room for about 6 hours, blowing that thing up and taking a break. And so the big
Dad didn't have a bike pump. Dad would bike to work.
We tried. There was no adapter. There was no way to make the pump talk to the thing. And then when Molly realized there was no Santa, she was – she's probably told you this, but she got enlisted to be Santa's helper. Because the day before she said, so Mom, I wish I could remember the exact words, but she basically told me that she knew I was Santa. And, I said, you know what, Molly, you're smart. You figured that out. And maybe you'd want to help. I thought this would be a nice experience for her to be a grown up and help set up her brother's stuff, not realizing that I had gotten a Kinect roller coaster, which is 8,000 sticks and wheels that you have to put together to make this thing work. And Molly she's scarred. I think it's like something that haunts her to this day.
It was a number of first experiences rolled into one because it was the Kinex Scream and Serpent roller coaster. Because I look it up in Google Images to show people what I had to do. Because Kinex is, it's sort of a, you make a little framework out of plastic, little plastic dowels and sort of joints. So it's not meant to make smooth shapes like a roller coaster track, but darned it if they didn't try. And so I'm putting this thing together, and It's a Wonderful Life is playing on AMC in a loop, as is wont to happen around that time of year. And so I can kind of measure how long it took me to build this thing because I saw It's a Wonderful Life about 4 times in a sitting.
She stayed up all night putting together her brother's roller
coaster. I loved like the fiddly assembly of the things. Like we didn't.
I couldn't figure it out. I was trying. She came to help me, and then I was like, oh, hell.
Like, I was the kid, like, Mom would bring me, like, oh, what is this this panel for this? Oh, that covers the battery pack and then that thing. Oh, okay, thanks, Molly. Yeah. So, like, I understand.
Yes,
I like putting things together.
She would explain to us what the odd parts were.
You were the analog IT person.
Yeah, basically what I would translate for the baby when he was speaking babble. Like, that was just kind of my role.
Molly, what'd he say? Yeah.
But.
So she became Santa in a really hardcore way.
Pulling an all-nighter, putting it. You figured it out, did you? Yeah, like Jimmy Stewart was taunting me in his voice, like in my head by the time I was
by
done.
The third or fourth.
Oh, your fingers are really bad, don't they? Yeah, Jimmy, thanks.
I was thinking about this last year because my sister's got two little ones of her own, and we were all sort of enlisted, me and Kayla and Matt and Tabby. We're sort of enlisted to like wrap the presents and get things ready to be, this went into like 1 o'clock in the morning. Ooh. and then with the information that the kids would be up at 6 in the morning.
Right.
And it made me feel, It made me feel very bad for mom and my dad growing up. The idea that it's just like, oh, wow, Christmas, really, if you're a parent, is a 24-hour gig, and there are just zero breaks.
It's a lot of pressure because there's so much anticipation and so much expectation. And, you know, you do learn very quickly to take things out of the box ahead of time because all of those toys have to be put together. They don't all have to be inflated, but they all have to be put together. And it's getting late. And in our house, when Josh was growing up, we opened our gifts after midnight. So Josh and his sister would go to bed. We would
air quotes go to bed.
Go to bed. Sit next to the bedroom door.
Yeah. And we would race around downstairs. We'd be at my mom and dad's, and we would race around to get everything ready. And then our tradition was that we would ring some jingle bells, open the door, and my mother, who had the highest voice of all of us, which in hindsight was a bad choice.
Made no sense.
Made no sense. She would say, ho, ho, ho. Oh.
But she sounded like Marge's sister. It was like, ow, ow, ow. Like she couldn't. Her voice just didn't. She was permanently a little helium.
Oh, my God.
Like, so it just didn't make sense.
No, but you bought it.
Oh, sure.
And it wasn't then great, kid. We slammed the door. And then that was the cue for them to come running downstairs and find their
toys.
Wow.
So that was the little theater. That's awesome. Yes. I love that.
And we would come barreling down the stairs on our butts, probably, like sliding down the stairs.
Shag carpeting.
Shag carpeting, yes. Yep. Very
get
good
a
for
piece of cardboard. Whoosh.
Yep, down you go.
Good for butt sliding. I also like in this story that Santa uses the traditional front door. Knock, knock, knock. Oh, hello, everyone. Just passing through. It's me, Weirdly High Voice Santa. It's me, Weirdly High Voice Santa.
And there was a fireplace. But we ignored that. Did the jingle bells. Ho, ho, ho.
We're on a first-name basis with Santa.
Right. Did you put the cookies out?
Well, that was one of the things we always had to remember. We'd be running around.
Gotta bite the cookie.
Yep. And there was always a carrot
Carrots.
For the reindeer. Mm-hmm. And honestly, after drinking and putting toys together, it's like, you be the one to chew on the carrot. No, you chew the carrot. No, I don't want to chew the carrot. But you, someone has to
chew the
carrot.
Someone's got to bite the damn carrot.
Yeah.
Was there any hope that the anti-commercialism sentiment in this Christmas special would soften that obligation at all? Did you think we'd take that to heart in
that
any way?
That it would lower your expectations?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
I'm going to receive gifts of the heart.
No,
year.
Thank you, Santa. Please give my presents to charity.
That would be awfully Linus. I think Linus. Somebody says, I don't want anything for Christmas. Is that Linus?
Possibly. Tens and
twenties. No, that did not. Because you know what? We were all in on the whole gift giving thing. Our family, it's all about exchanging the gifts. So I don't think that was one of my hopes. No. Although I will say, you know, Molly was a reluctant religious education student.
You don't say.
She did all of the classes that I put her through, but it was always with a jaundiced eye. And I knew that, but still I felt the obligation to put her through all the classes, but. She made a homemade Christmas card once that we actually reproduced and sent out as our Christmas card. And she drew a little creche with the baby Jesus laying there with a very sweet and serene expression. And across the top, she wrote a portion of what Linus spoke in his I'll Tell You What Christmas Is All About, Charlie Brown. And I was like, oh, my glorious day. My daughter can quote scripture. I thought it was like really from her religious studies. And it was just from the Charlie Brown special.
Well, because I also would quote Flanders Fields at Grandpa.
Absolutely.
Just anything Linus learned, I would learn.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So
This is a...
It was her religious ed.
This is a good segue, I think. Mother and I were watching the special this morning, doing the strenuous prep work that I always do, 10 minutes before the podcast. And maybe it had been a minute since you had watched it, because Linus went into his, that's what Christmas is all about. And Mom just sort of again looked up for her phone and went, well, this took a hard left turn into Catholicism, didn't it?
It totally does. It catches you by surprise.
It does.
It just goes all Christian on you in no time.
At length.
At length.
It's a good big old chunk of the whole story.
We were, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, we did not grow up in a faith-based household, to say the absolute least. I think I said this on the Easter special, to embarrass Mom, who was in the audience for that. I asked my mom once, hey Mom, how come we don't go to church? And her response was, going to church is somebody talking to you for an hour. Do you want me to talk to you for an hour? And I was like, absolutely not. And I did not ask that question again.
That's an excellent explanation.
It sure is.
This is accurate.
But y'all did, Kathy and Molly.
I did. And I will say I was raised in, my mother is Shia Catholic. And so we went through all of the.
She was nearly a nun.
She was nearly a nun, which she doesn't tell many people. So, hey, world, my mom was nearly a nun. we went through it, and I actually got very involved in church because of the music. Because it was 1976, and I wanted to play the guitar in the guitar mass. So I started being a church musician, and that led me really, I will say that probably my relationship with the church has been maintained because I've moved through the music ministry. It's a once a week shot in the arm of I'm doing music. And I ended up directing the children's music for their children's ed, which meant that my children had better show up. So I honestly think, and I guess I'm just coming to this realization now. Ooh, moment. Ooh, I don't know if I would have really required my kids to go through the church education if I hadn't been part of the administration.
Sure.
So,
And we sat in the front row. We didn't get a kneeler, which I always kind of resented a little bit.
Yeah. Because I was singing the mass. So you sit in the front to the side and you don't get to kneel on the thingy.
But it's given me some very useful, like just every week practicing, like sort of, I remember like in the nicest sort of mom sort of way, you told me that I had like resting bitch face.
Yes. Everyone's looking at you, Molly, because you're my kid sitting by me.
So I learned to just kind of lock into like, oh, that's really interesting. Yep. While I'm like miles away.
It was actually really,
which is a really good life
it's
skill.
It's really good theater training. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you didn't get from Young Americans, you totally got sitting in church.
Because you told me to watch the pastor until like a little outline kind of formed around him from staring at him for so long.
Oh, did I tell you that?
You did.
Oh, no. You were like trying to then project him into the ghost dimension.
You could almost green screen him.
It'll zap away.
I don't know if I told you to do that, but I know that happened to me all the time where he would sort of – the color on him would disappear.
Because he stands at the lectern. He, right. You know, he's very
right.
Predictable movements to the whole thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Not so much in our household with any of this. How did you and Dad sort of – because there is obviously a religious aspect to Christmas, and there is very much, and we watched it a million times growing up, so I'm sure you heard that speech a million times. Linus is, you know, quoting the scripture. How? I'm trying to think of the absolute the best way to ask this. How did you sort of navigate us around the religious side of Christmas as opposed to the cultural side of Christmas? And so when Linus kind of went into his scripture rap, did you ever kind of say to us like, okay, well, that's from the Bible and that's, you know, part of the Christmas holiday, but it's not a thing that we do. Does this kind of make sense? Do you know what I mean?
It does. Well, when your dad and I got married, we decided that we were not going to raise you and your sister either Catholic or Jewish. We were simply going to raise you.
Which you did.
Which we did.
Good on you.
Mission accomplished. So,
yep, we did that. And then because of how shallow we are, we simply decided that this was going to be great because we would celebrate every holiday known to humankind, which meant many gifts.
No problem there.
So that's what we did. You and your sister didn't seem to have any issue or big questions about what might be the difference, because periodically we would go to a church for a christening or for a bar mitzvah, to a synagogue for a bar mitzvah. So you would be in different houses of worship, and you took it, I think, as theater.
Yeah.
And as far as what was in Charlie Brown and the scripture, I think I did say that's from the Bible. The Bible is a book. And when you get to college, you will take a course called The Bible is Literature.
Yes, offered offered in every fine theater school across the country. That's when I got to Boston University's theater program. That is the first class they sat us down for. Don't you worry about it.
Well, in most liberal arts courses, that was an option.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I just also like the idea that you were like, and you'll read it in college. Like it was
you'll get around to
like it was Lady Chatterley's Lover or some shit. Like, oh, no, that's not appropriate for a young growing mind. But it didn't – I guess my question is, it didn't bum you out when like – Linus took that thing into Bible Town. You weren't like, this is an indoctrination.
No. And my mother and father would put up a manger in a stable because I was raised Catholic and they were Catholics, not practicing by the time you and your sister came along.
No, they noped. The whole everyone except your sister sort of noped out of the church. I mean, Tabby and I weren't ever really in it to begin with. Why did my man grandpa, my man French Canadian for grandma, why did my man grandpa nope out of the church?
You know, I'm not really sure. I had asked them once and they said, well, once you and your sister were grown, you know, we felt that our job as raising good Catholics was done and we could sleep in on Sunday. They didn't say that, but I thought maybe that was
implied.
I always thought it might have had something to do with that nun who gave you a hard time at school and grandpa and Meme had to come in and like read her the riot act.
Beat the crap out of her.
Yes, that did happen, but that was when I was in kindergarten.
Oh,
so,
okay.
No, that didn't happen later on in life. And Aunt Toni, your aunt, went to Catholic high school. I started at Catholic high school, but I was asked to leave.
Oh.
Well, hey, what?
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Two tails now. Come
Molly,
on.
Molly, take over.
I
have the favors.
Do cannabis and rosewater, miss.
You're smoking cigarettes behind the school. I'm so excited. It's like my mom's a John Waters character. What happened?
Well, I had been having some problems dealing with authority from the get-go.
Sure.
And also... And you have to remember, this is a Catholic all-girls high school, and they were very parochial, if you will, in their rules, which I found ridiculous. For example, you could never walk in front of the chapel, which was on the second floor. You either had to go up to the third floor, cross over, down a flight of stairs to get to your classroom at the other end of the hall. Imagine how I felt about extra steps. No.
Not great.
Also, you're supposed to bring your library books back, and I didn't.
Born to be wild.
Then there was a day, and so I had gotten demerits and detention, and they'd call my parents and said, you know, she just doesn't have the right attitude. And my parents were heartbroken because they thought this was a wonderful education. And then one day we were at school late and we thought everybody was gone. And I said, you know, I learned to play Ray Charles What I Say. And so we went into the choir loft.
I'm dying.
I love this story. Please keep going. Keep going.
And we went into the choir loft and, you know, we looked behind us and we looked in the hallway and we looked everywhere and we were like, there's no one here. This is awesome. And so we flipped on the organ and I sat down.
Organ. Baby, it's all right.
I let it rip.
Oh my God.
And where we hadn't looked, because we were 15-year-old stupids, was down into the chapel where there were many nuns.
Molly just turned me down. Right.
We can still hear you, Josh. Don't worry.
Oh, God. Keep going.
Doing a novena.
Oh! Everybody say hey.
And so,
oh my God,
the novena ended very quickly, and Sister Herman Joseph came up to the choir loft and nabbed us all and took us to her office and called her parents. And I think the message she gave my parents was, we think she would be happier elsewhere, and we are convinced we would be much happier if she was elsewhere, and then I was elsewhere.
You're a rock star.
So amazing. And I feel like my difficult teenage years would have been so much easier when you were like, if you were giving me hell for not doing my homework or like coming in after curfew, if you were like, I'm furious at you. And by the way, I was thrown out of Catholic school. I will have you know for singing Ray Charles. And then I'd be like, wow, she's really mad and I'm really upset about this, but that's cool as shit. I guess I can't be too mad. I mean, I guess I really have to respect her as an authority figure that much more because that's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Well, thank you, Josh.
She'd have had a lot more mom cred back in those days if she had told you that story.
That is how I would have introduced you to everyone. Any girlfriend I brought, this is my mom. She is a journalist and she was thrown out of Catholic school for playing Ray Charles on the
church organ during a novena.
Yeah.
Was it a big old pipe organ? I'm dying.
Oh, God. Yes, of course it was.
Oh, my! I figured that's what it was, but there was part of me that was kind of hoping it was like a Sears Roebuck organ. Yeah, with like a little
on the end with a. We had one of those. Oh, oh my God.
Oh my God, that's the greatest story ever. Oh.
Oh, it's a Christmas miracle.
It really is.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
That would be such a lights, please. That's what I say.
Don't treat me wrong. He's hitting the far keys with his blanket.
Shoulder, set the mood for the first act.
Everybody say hey.
Oh, it's beautiful. Kathy, both of you, as we've said, have watched the special a thousand times. Kathy, when you watched it with Molly to ramp up for today's Momtacular, anything stand out to you? Anything you didn't notice before? Anything that you just – was it a markedly different experience or because you were watching it with a more critical eye?
Well, Mom, if you had to guess, how many times have we watched it?
Together, like in the traditional way, near Christmas time kind of thing? Because we watched it just on road trips and things. So.
Right.
Oh, that's a tough one. Many, many times.
Because you kept the count of how many times we went to Disneyland in a year's time.
Right. Well, because we had, you know, that it was a physical marker. Number. We bought a postcard every time we went, and that gave us a way to count.
Would you, like, what place would you put it in? In the 10th place? In the 100th place?
I would say we're at least past 100, wouldn't you say?
I would think so.
But, you know, at that point, it just becomes that sort of pacifying background sound because you know it so well.
Yeah.
I have watched the West Wing seasons back to back countless times, and I know all the dialogue, and it's just that I can do my thing. I can grade these papers. And I can do these things
because
it's comforting sound. And that's what the special turned into, comforting sound.
Just the sort of VCR tapes of just, just run this in a loop.
You know, the thing, Josh, that I did notice that I wouldn't have cared about before was it was surprising to me to see the little in-between stuff that I'd never noticed before. Like early in the thing, Charlie Brown's looking out the window and it's snowing outside and his arms are kind of his hands are clasped behind his back in a grandfatherly way. And then he realizes he's going to go outside now. And he lets go of his hands and he turns around, but his shoulders turn, but his head remains gazing out the window for a moment longer. Like he doesn't want to let go of that scene. And I thought, wow, that was a lot of trouble to turn his body around and leave his head back. And
it's two separate cells.
Right. Yeah. They just took some time with the little moments before and after a thing. He looks in, he goes to the mailbox and he's going to look to see if there's a card in there. He knows it because the flag's not up. So he goes to the mailbox and he looks to the side and to the side. And then he looks behind him. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't want to be seen looking once again into the mailbox where there is no invitation. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much more little passing stuff that they took the time to illustrate.
Yeah.
That give us some insight into his experience that I had never noticed before. So they took a lot of time to show you thought.
Well, and we also, as we were watching, I was kind of pointing out, because we've gone through now a couple decades of the show, the sort of the seeds of personality, the little, like, the sort of the little bit of oh, dog germs. That's a little thing that they just kind of, there's the sort of things that will become the defining thing for that character in future specials.
Right.
And Sally's pursuit of Linus and, you know, Lucy just being afraid of dog germs and so on. But in this special, it seemed like there was more consideration to how those characters and those personalities kind of exist together.
Right.
Rather than like you pull a bell and Schroeder says his thing and you pull this other bell and then Linus says his thing.
And Lucy in future episodes, future adventures just seems so one dimensional. She's just the cranky one. She's just the bossy one. But here she actually,
she wants to be the Christmas queen.
Right. And she's, you see little flashes of compassion. Some people just are. You don't have to want. No, there's just a lot more nuance to their personalities and they ditch a lot of the things that make them more rounded people.
Yeah.
In the future, they just become flat, you know, so.
That's definitely a thing that Molly and I have observed over the years of watching.
Lifetimes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How about you, Mother? When we watched it this morning, was there anything that sort of stood out to you or something that surprised you? Or?
Well, as I mentioned to you when we were watching it, it seemed to me that there were a lot of scenes where people were just walking around.
That's
they're just walking. And I wasn't sure why they had to be walking so much.
Why don't they just call an Uber, is what you were thinking?
Well, that it just cuts to walking.
So much of childhood, I think, is just walking around, though.
Well, that's a good point. I think you're right.
And it's also very cheap to animate. So those two things go together. But yes, I definitely remember as a kid, like 50% of a kid is just sort of aimlessly strolling. Molly and I have this joke, this ongoing joke, that the whatever town or landscape all of these kids live in is just a circle. And when they're not actually involved in doing something, they're just doing laps around town. And that's how people always bump into each other constantly if they're not just hanging out at each other's homes. But yeah, I feel like a lot of my childhood was either walking around or riding my bike around or just sort of like killing time until a responsibility happened.
I think you're right. It also seemed to me there was a lot of dancing for no particular reason.
That's how I feel about all dancing, though.
It's kind of like they're the Shakers or something. All of them, periodically, they just like burst into dance.
They all got the same vitus.
And it's adorable. And we all recognize that music and we recognize the way they're dancing. But it's cut in a lot for not necessarily any logical reason.
I think that represented their distractibility because it was a frustration to Charlie Brown always there. They break into dance. He's supposed to be running a rehearsal.
He's the director,
suddenly they're dancing. So it was just, I just thought, well, you know, it's just the distractibility of childhood. They're supposed to be focused on this production and they can't help but
dance. I never knew if that was just like, well, screw you, Charlie Brown, or if it was like if it was an act of protest or if it was just like, never mind, we're going to dance.
I think it's just kids. You don't remember, but you kids did the same thing.
Oh no, I did. I danced to the Beatles' Red Album by myself.
Oh God, totally.
A ton.
Oh, totally.
For certain.
Mom, was I a distractible child? She gave me just such a look.
She did. I saw it.
Audio can't convey.
I will attest.
You were very focused on the things you were interested in.
That's a very nice way of saying.
Very diplomatic.
Very momly done.
Yes. Very momly done.
And easily distracted in other situations. Yes.
So I see why the two of you have bonded so nicely.
Because
you can focus in constructively on this.
Yeah.
Will you? You have not watched this with the grandkids yet, you were telling me.
I haven't. And I'm not really sure. It's not that I wouldn't, but I think it's run in November. I want to say right after Thanksgiving. I think it's run twice every season, or it has run twice every Christmas season since it came out.
Yeah.
But they typically come closer to Christmas and it's already aired.
Yeah.
Now, could we find it and show it to them? Sure.
It is on many of the streaming platforms. That's how you and I watched it today. Do you think they'd... I keep going back and forth. Like, I love it because I grew up watching it, and the first time I saw it was the early 70s, and there wasn't a lot. And there was, like, Sesame Street, and there was Disney garbage and things of that nature. But, like, certainly children's television and children's entertainment is a very different thing today. And I wonder if two kids who were raised on Sophia the First and Peppa Pig and whatnot could sit still for 25 minutes of weird children being sad and dancing and wondering about whether or not they should get a fake tree or a real tree.
Right. Well, they don't have a frame of reference for Peanuts, as far as I know. So it would be a new experience. And I don't know how much production values come into what would appeal to kids now, you know, whether they would see this, the pacing and just the way the characters do look kind of flat. The animation is not awesome.
Clearly old. Yeah.
So, I think it would be a good experience, and I think you should watch it with them when they come.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll say Eli, how old is Eli now?
Three.
He's my nephew. I guess he's my nephew.
Yeah.
And Grandma was trying to get a picture of him on her couch yesterday, and my youngest brother walks around with like just a Bluetooth speaker clipped to his pants now, and during the holidays he just plays Vince Guaraldi out of his pants. It's an odd habit,
which I appreciate
for a young man, but you know, he just kind of colors the scene wherever he goes. And I think Linus and Lucy came on, mm-hmm. like some music from this special. And Eli sat up and went, "Snoopy!" like that.
Wow.
A three-year-old.
It's adorable.
So it's, there's something, I think partially because he's printed on any surface that'll hold ink.
Yeah.
Right. There is, he's still in the sort of popular imagination, just kind of not in a, just more in a Hello Kitty sort of fashion. As we covered in our last year's Christmas rewatch. Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a lot to be said for how the parent feels about anything that a child experiences for the first time. Mm-hmm. And so, not even the first time. I'm sure that when we would watch Charlie Brown, I don't have a specific memory, but it mattered so much to me. I had so much affection for the thing that I'm sure you kids pick that up as well. Mm-hmm. There are other things that I am passionate about that you have become
That informs
about.
My attitude towards like the West Wing, you know,
Absolutely.
And Northern Exposure. Yeah.
Right. And Sondheim. And, that's what I wanted to see and I cared about. And I would point out, now, listen here. Do you hear that again? That's Joanna's theme, you know? So sure. Now you're like, oh, I understand why.
Well,
this
and like
is good.
the sing-along tapes, we were just kind of left to our own devices.
Yeah.
Or the little happy loops with like Who's Line and whatever was in there.
Right.
But you would watch the Christmas special with us.
Absolutely.
And I remember you would like sort of feed us prompt like lines from the thing for mm-hmm. us to bounce back. And you would ask me, well, what is it that you want? And I would, I didn't
well,
know
what is it you really want?
I didn't know what real estate was. And so I would say, real mistake.
And we thought that was hysterical.
Yeah. So you would just prompt me to do that constantly. And I don't know how old I would have been.
Oh,
not old enough to know what real estate is, apparently.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So it matters to us. So that's why it mattered to you, you know.
You didn't grow up with any particular affection one way or the good, bad, or indifferent for Peanuts. I mean, it was a comic strip since the mid-50s. So I'm sure you encountered it.
I did. And I really did identify with Lucy.
That's awesome.
But
organ playing rock and roll Lucy.
Yeah. and I certainly it was just matter of fact that you would be exposed to it too, because it was
just the law.
It's the law. It's part of pop culture, and we were nothing if not part of pop culture.
Absolutely true. Did your affection for it grow through my affection for it, or did you reach a point where you were like, if he says Charlie Brown or Snoopy again, I am leaving him on the front stoop of the fire department?
My affection for it grew leaps and bounds as you loved it, because it was an opportunity to easily find you birthday presents and Christmas presents.
Sure, sure.
That's a good
tech. Very practical.
Get him the towel according to Charlie Brown, or we'll get him the Snoopy slippers,
yes.
Or we'll get him this. The snow cone maker.
Guaranteed happy dance.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Exactly. So.
Because John, my theory, the theory we've kind of developed over talking to many guests about this over, I guess, four of these now, is that, you know, the thing that this special nails is that Christmas is much like childhood in that it is happy and sad at the same time. And it is just sort of a sentence that can only be waited out. It can't be, you just have to kind of wait for it to be done. This season of your life that you feel like you're stuck in forever with no guidance, but a feeling that you are doing it wrong somehow. And I don't know if that's a thing that we related to as children or if that's begged we're putting on it as adults now. What do you think, Josh?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, now that my sister has kids, it definitely, when we are all home for Christmas, it definitely kind of lights more, a little more of a fire under my butt. To be like, well, I hope we're Christmasing right. Because my sister and I growing up, my mom and my grandparents gave us exceptional Christmases year in and year out. My grandfather and my grandmother went all out for it. And I love Christmas to this day. I love it for different reasons now, but it's a lot of pressure. Did you feel a lot of pressure growing up, Mom, to make sure that we were Christmasing correctly? Or, well, you also had Meme and Grandpa to sort of...
I had Meme and Grandpa, and they had Christmas down. So they knew how to do Christmas. So I just followed I had very good Christmas examples.
Yeah.
And followed them along. But you do. You And it is a pressure, I think, on all parents that you want to make Christmas the most special, wonderful, magical time for your kids. And you can't make it exactly perfect. You never can, but you do your best.
Yeah.
And the reality is that kids don't really need a lot for it to be magical and wonderful. You know, there's a tree which is magical when you look at it in your house, all lit up with lights, and there's presents that you've wanted which are wonderful, and you get to see your relatives, and some of them give you socks and underwear, but that's okay. And
I have to interrupt for just a second. I'm sorry, Mom. The first time that Kayla came to Christmas, my grandparents were still alive at the time, and I'm so happy that that Kayla got to experience a bunch of Christmases and holidays with them. But for this reason, more specifically, everyone got a stocking, and they were very kind, and they had a stocking for Kayla, and Kayla got the same stocking stuffers that we all got, which is to say, razors, a deodorant, a couple of lottery tickets, and possibly a losing lottery ticket that one of us put back in the stocking from like Gerald Ford bucks or whatever the F. And a giant pack of underpants.
Right.
Just a big old roll, a big old six pack of panties.
Go enjoy college.
That typically said irregular up in the corner because she had gotten them on sale.
Honey, it's not a commentary on you. It's not. There's nothing wrong with any of it.
Not a regular size. You're not.
Yeah, you're fine.
You'll be walking funny, but no problem.
One of your legs is probably longer than the other.
She was mortified.
Because Kayla was mortified. Poor thing. We never gave it a thought. It's kind of like they were stockings for prisoners. And we just, you know, put underpants, a razor, you know, in, and we plopped it into hers, and we're all sitting there happy. And she pulls out a giant pack of underpants and dies.
I'm rethinking her
Welcome
relationship
to the family.
With
John. Right.
Yeah, well, here's your underpants. Yeah, there was that. And then the other thing in our household, the big Christmas tradition and holiday tradition, was that before – I'm sure I've told this on the podcast before, but the big holiday tradition for dinner was that there was – my grandfather was Italian, and so therefore we were all Italian. There was a pasta course before the main dish, before the meat and proteins came out. And so my grandmother brought out like a big lasagna and a big tray of stuffed shells, and Kayla, you know, wanting to play along, thought to herself, oh, well, this is how they do. You know, other Christmas meals I've seen or big family meals, there's usually a turkey or a ham or something. But I guess – so, you know, she had a big piece of lasagna. And my grandfather was like, you want to eat – everybody needs to eat.
Have a meatball.
Eat your body weight in pasta right now. I'm going to watch. So Kayla was like being polite. She was like, oh, I'll have another pizza. And they cleared our plates and then brought out the turkey and the ham and the roast beef. And Kayla was like, I have to go to a hospital.
Wait, so was this the same she had just received, like, a whole pack of underwear?
Well, this was at least split.
Okay. So she thought she was being pranked, surely.
No, because I think the gift opening we did the night before, and then we all went back to my grandparents' house. Christmas Eve was for opening presents at my grandparents', and then my grandfather would also put out, like, a cold-cut platter.
At 2 a.m. Then we all happily tucked into –
Of course.
There's a lot of food.
That's when you want cold cuts, really.
Really.
I like to pull them up around me like a little blanket, like I'm Gudetama with the bacon.
Eat a giant Dagwood sandwich and then go to bed.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning to
wake
open presents.
Wake up at six, open more presents,
didn't do that,
eat heavens. Some more.
Wow.
And, yes.
Yeah.
And, but
great.
Poor Kayla, yes, she thought the pasta course was dinner. And
it's not. And to this day, we say, Thanksgiving's around the corner, and I will be making a lasagna, and I don't care if nobody eats it or not. We'll have lasagna in the house for a week, and that's and again, that's little ways that we have found to sort of honor Meme and Grandpa. Because going back to the question, like, are we Christmasing right? Definitely, and not to get too maudlin, after they passed, I feel like for a couple of years we were at sea trying to figure out how to Christmas.
Well, it was very difficult because Josh's grandparents died within 3 weeks of each other.
Wow.
And in the fall. And so it was right before Christmas. And
Grandpa literally on Thanksgiving.
He died on Thanksgiving. Aww. And so the first Christmas after, in particular, was impossible.
Adrift.
I mean, everyone was just numb.
Well, we didn't know how to Christmas.
We didn't. we didn't know how, we didn't know where, because we always went to their house, and we really didn't want to so much.
Yeah.
And the next year we were like, okay, we gotta pull this together.
Yeah.
You know, we're still a family.
You got little ones coming
and
up.
We and we got, you know, so we gotta pull this together. Mm-hmm. And some, of that falls on, Josh and me, because, Tabby's husband is Jewish and Kayla is Jewish. So, we had the Christmas traditions, and so we had to take them, unpack them, and take them back out, and get them going again.
And it was, and there was something kind of nice about it at the same time. I mean, it was awful, but at the same time, it was like, well, now we can figure out what Christmas means to us.
True.
And it's been a paring down process.
It has. It
which
has.
Is really, because I think for the first few years, we were like, we're inviting everybody in town over on Christmas Eve, and we're putting out a spread and cold cuts and things, and we're going to bake all day and blah, 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 and sort of like a dancing as fast as we can sort of way. And the nice thing is, especially because there are two little ones, and Isla is like a little one. She's four. And it's, and now we're all just sort of like, well, we're doing this for them. We're good. We've had years of wonderful Christmas. We don't want for anything at this point.
We do like our stockings, though.
We do like our stockings.
Gotta get your underpants and your razors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotta get the underpants and razors. And when mom's retired now, but when she worked for the Hartford Courant for many years, whatever garbage swag was sent into her at the paper.
Oh, yeah. My Aunt Jenny, anything that she gets from work goes into the White Elephant next Christmas.
Right. It's great.
But yeah, it's, and I feel like, and I feel like once we took the pressure of Christmasing correctly off of us and trying to like do a cover version of our childhood Christmases.
That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's sort of the first and second act of, to bring it back to Charlie Brown as much as we can. Cause they're sort of forced to, they sort of have to figure out Christmas in absence of adults. And they're just doing like, these are the steps that I understand. We have to have a Christmas queen. We have to have a penguin. You get to play a shepherd. You get to play the innkeeper's wife. And there's just kind of everybody being assigned sort of roles, just kind of based on what they think they should be doing and what, you know, this is how Christmas do. And at the end, they're just standing around a tree singing outside. They've stripped away so much of that, which is probably the sort of the thing that you relate to in this special. It's this weird prism where whatever you need to sort of comfort yourself about the Christmas season, this thing can provide, which is probably why it's the only Charlie Brown special worth watching at this point.
Yeah. Sure. But get ready for next season, everyone.
This is, where are we, the '80s now?
We're about to go into the '80s.
We're barreling into the '80s.
Which includes what?
Flash Beagle.
Oh no.
Not this season.
Not this season. Yeah, there's so much '80s, we have to split it into two seasons.
Molly, if you could ask my mom any question about young Josh or anything.
Ooh.
Oh, I didn't know there'd be a quiz.
It's not a quiz.
I don't know. I just kind of, I gotta want to know more about like what other Snoopy swag he had that he attached himself to. Like how long did I can just get him a Peanuts thing. How long did that train? How long could you ride that train?
To college.
Fantastic.
A man after my own heart.
If you can ask my mom any question, Josh.
When did you know she was exceptional? And not just like in a mom kind of way, because all moms think their kids are exceptional, but when did it first sort of land on you like, oh, Molly's really something?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you honestly, she was absolutely beautiful from the day she was born. But when she had memorized the Flanders Fields poem from the, what was that one? What Have We Learned, Charlie Brown?
Yeah.
And it's her grandpa, Sheldon, her father's father, had been, what was he, a medic or something?
Yeah.
In World War II. No.
Yeah, World War II.
Yeah. And so Flanders Fields was a very special poem to him. And it's, I'm sure you know it, but it talks about the poppies that grow in the field where they've laid their dead. And, it's a beautiful poem, but I'd never heard it. I don't know it. And, we were vacationing with them. And there she is, little girl spinning around. I don't know how she was, very small. And she just started to recite that. Because she knew it, and it moved him, He to hear this little voice. But she recited it earnestly, the way Linus recited it, you know. And I think something in her realized that what she did, what that reading of this poem, affected her grandpa. And I think it was at that moment that she realized you could do things and say things and sing things, and it moved people. It communicated with them. And I thought, oh, now that she knows this is a power, you know.
Oh, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right. And so, yeah, she kind of had a habit of memorizing things and learning things, singing things that were just made you go, oh, so anything that would kind of double you over. She was just more than willing to whip that out when it was valuable.
So, it was advantageous.
Yeah. So I just kind of always hoped she'd use her powers for good. So I think you're keeping her on that track a little bit, Josh. Thank you for that.
I don't really do anything. Molly's a self-cleaning mechanism. I'm just her buddy. I don't do a damn thing. Nobody can.
Well, this is a lovely diversion the two of you have created. So I appreciate that.
That's what we aim for.
Mm-hmm. Team moms, any final thoughts?
Well, I didn't get to brag about you.
Mm-hmm. I would never encourage you to do that. But if Molly wants to.
But I want you to tell the moment that you knew that you had power over people and could make them laugh.
Was it when I ate the dog biscuit?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
These are very different stories. Well, Molly recited a poem that made her grandfather think of all of his fallen fellow soldiers in the ages of Normandy. My grandparents had...
Dylan.
This was Dylan?
This was Dylan.
A pretty good poodle. Pretty good mm-hmm. poodle mix. Named Dylan after Bob Dylan.
Mom, no.
No?
Dylan after Dylan Thomas.
Did you
there
name
There you
him?
Go.
No.
Mm-hmm. Meme, who read Dylan Thomas between Meme and Grandpa?
Well, I guess I did, but she must have known the name.
I guess.
Dylan.
Yeah, and I would like to think I didn't actually eat it, but I picked it up and I just went, yum, 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 yum. And before it was... smacked out of my hand for being like, please don't put gross things in your mouth.
Little boy, don't eat the dog biscuit.
Little boy, don't eat the dog biscuit. Everybody, I think I was kind of doing a bit with it as well. I don't think I just picked it up and was like quietly eating it. I'm sure I made a big deal out of it because I'm me and I've always been me. And everybody started laughing.
A lot.
And, yeah, I guess somewhere in there, it's like, oh, if I do things that are out of the ordinary, that gets a response, that gets a laugh. I don't think I continued with that shtick because dog biscuits are not tasty at all.
You found others.
I found other bits. But yeah, that was definitely like the first time that I had the idea of like, oh, I can do things on purpose that make people laugh.
Yes. And you did them very well.
Yes. I love that you were like, I want to brag about my son. What will I say? Will I talk about like when, you know, he did theater as a kid? Will I talk about the high school or the playwriting contest that he won? No, no, no.
He played Vic in Assassins.
I did. Well, not really? until grad school. But yes, when I was five. But I just love that it was like, oh, yeah, no. He ate dog food, and we just thought it was a riot. Well, smart kid. Glad he's not in jail.
Well, what was your first sort of actual theater, not theater for your family, which takes place in the kitchen while everyone's doing dishes, but, you know, when did you step out in front of an audience and, you know, step away from the comfort of guaranteed laugh?
I think in fourth grade, Mom enrolled me at the Elmwood Community Center's theater program, and we did, like, they did a musical every year. Mm-hmm. And I think the first one I did was, I think it might have been Bye Bye Birdie, and I was Hugo. Not a big singing part. None of the things I did in musicals involved big singing parts, although I was Rooster and Annie. But Easy Street is a pretty easy one to sort of flub your way through. And I want to put that around like fourth or fifth grade. Does that sound right?
It does.
Yeah. Fifth, sixth grade. And that for me sort of cemented like, oh, I really like doing this. I really like being in front of people and being funny. And then over the years, I sort of pulled that back to like, you know what? Being up on stage is an awful lot of work. Mm-hmm. There's lines to memorize. You know what's better? I'll just be the person who writes those lines. That'll go easier for me. I have a terrible memory.
You still get to show up on the day, but you don't have to actually like do the work on the stage.
I stand there with a frosty drink and watch everyone else work. Yeah. But yeah, like regularly around fourth or fifth grade, like, and also when it was just like kind of bleak for me getting along with other kids, I found, you know, a community of like-minded weirdos at the sort of kids community theater, and then carried that with me through junior high and high school.
Well, I will brag one more time, which was
He pooped in the street. Like, what else? Your brags have been terrible.
We're sitting. Josh is nervous now.
He threw up on our new carpet.
Big picture here, Josh. Big picture. Dog biscuit there, but look where you are.
You're
now
a versatile man. Right.
So we're sitting at the dinner table, and Josh says, you know, they're having a kids talent show at the Elmwood Community Center.
Oh, God.
And I'm going to go audition. And I'm a very supportive mom. And I said, you can't do anything. What are you going to do?
Oy vey.
And he said, I'm going to tell jokes. Mm-hmm. And so he went. I was like, okay, thinking to myself, this is going to be a really bad situation. And he came back and he said, I made it. I'm in the talent show. And not only am I in the talent show, they're calling it the Josh Kagan Show.
Well, yeah, this is a whole thing. This turned into a show that I did like three or four episodes on West Hartford cable access, where I like got up in a little hat and bow tie and told like Henny Youngman jokes, like literally Henny Youngman jokes.
I just flew in and boy, are my arms tired.
Yeah, like literally like that.
How old were you?
I think I was like right around fifth or sixth grade when, again, like I was a very awkward child. And so imagine being at your most awkward phase, being put on television, and all of the adults being like, this is pretty amazing. Like you're not good, but like you're still doing this. And I like interviewed local celebrities and things like that.
Did you know this about Josh?
I did not.
Adults thought this was great. My classmates were like, this sucks so bad and you're not funny. And like throughout like the rest of junior high and high school, I would have people walk up to me like, oh, it's the Josh Kagan Show. Blah, 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 blah. And so I kind of grew to regard it as a terrible thing. But now I've reached peace with it because who gives a shit? But it was a very tiny, itty bitty, non-viral, very contained version. Whenever I see, with the exception of Molly, who's been great the entire time, like I see like kids on YouTube and I see kids like putting themselves on Instagram or whatever. And there's always a thing in the back of my head, like, ooh, you poor thing. Don't do this.
I've buried a bunch of stuff. You can unlist things from YouTube. Yeah. So like I've certainly buried things that I don't want people to dig up anymore.
Sure, absolutely. And this is like gone, gone, gone.
I was just going to say, is it sitting in a can someplace on the shelf in the back of some small station somewhere?
Yes, the AFI is restoring it as we speak.
Let's Criterion box set.
This is the Blu-ray with the commentary. No, but it was just interesting because it was like I see that happening again and again with social media and with YouTube and with things like that.
Yeah, but now everyone can do it. Back then, somebody had to see something in you and say, let's see what happens.
Let's ruin this kid's life for 2 years.
It was up for 2 years?
Well, I mean, like, I did like three or four episodes and then it was, again, they
but they the sort of social been, reverberations.
The social of reverberations of it lasted a minute. Mm-hmm. But I did get written about in the Times.
You absolutely did.
How about
New York
that?
Times.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we'll cut all of this.
No one gets to brag. No moms get to brag about their kids.
And Christmas is canceled. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Christmas is canceled. Molly, any final thoughts?
I feel like every year when we talk about this, I'm like, what more conclusions can I draw? But I imagine when we come back to this, you know, for season 8 and 9 and 10 and whatever, when they release the Criterion set of a Peanuts Gallery, we're going to see new things in it. I do wonder, we have never gotten a conclusive answer about what the Christmas Queen's role is. And I would love to know what we pictured.
Oh yeah, was this a 60s thing? Was this like part of the Eisenhower administration?
what the role of a Christmas queen was.
What is the, in like the nativ, like there's shepherds and there's sheep and there's.
That was absolutely Lucy just trying to figure out a way to put her in the center spotlight of this pageant.
That's not a thing. That's not a piece of the times. That's not, there weren't Christmas queens.
Because she would have. There might have been parts of pageants that there might have been a Christmas queen who.
Were you the Christmas queen?
Mm-hmm. I truly was not.
Was Tony?
Yes, she might have been. And that's a whole nother podcast.
Yes. We another year gone by and we still don't have conclusive evidence. Means, Molly, you are again the Christmas queen.
Yay!
I'm Josh Kagan.
I'm Molly Lewis.
I'm Kathy Lewis.
And I'm Corky.
And this has been Peanuts Gallery. Happy holidays, friends.
Bye. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, consider leaving us a review on iTunes, tweeting about us at Peanuts Podcast, or telling a friend. Thanks to Lard D'Souza for the graphics, Ken Plume for the blandishment, Waffle Media for the nickels, and Sparky, Bill, and Lee for everything else. If you'd like to buy an official Peanuts Gallery meat lump plush, you can't because they don't exist. But you can turn a dirty sock inside out and put googly eyes on it, and you're basically there.
Hey everybody, I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And we're the hosts of Columboys, a podcast all about Columbo and watching it.
Mac's seen every episode. I have never seen them before. We're watching them all together every 2 weeks.
It's a journey of fun and friends.
And Falk.